Okay, so we're recording it. Cool. Hi guys.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to the Forest School podcast. We're here. Gemma is off in Japan at the moment, so I have one of our other Forest School leaders here with me today to have a chat about Forest School training and kind of different bits to go with that. I think first thing we need to explain is that you and I trained at different places.
Different places.
And at different points.
Yeah.
So you've only very recently done your training.
Yep, I'm a newbie.
And I did mine, oh Jesus, it's coming up like 4 years ago. Which I worked out the other day is nearly the longest job. This is now nearly the longest job, like continuously I've ever had.
Oh, which it's the best one.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, let's say, because your voice has just dropped out for a second. So if the other leader drops out a little bit, it's just that we are not face-to-face today. We're talking over the computer, but we'll try and, leave loads of gaps so that that doesn't happen.
Cool.
So, I guess we start with the really big one. We both did level 3. And I guess we should talk about what we think makes a good level 3 trainer, because I think much like forest schools, where you go, oh, there are broad principles, but each person does their own type of forest school. I'd say there are probably broad principles of being a trainer.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And from our conversations up to now, it seems like we've had different trainers, I'll say.
Very different.
Yeah. So do you want to, I don't know, what do you think makes a good trainer, if you were going to say a few things?
So I would say they need to be really passionate about what they're doing and have that experience and knowledge to sort of back it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's quite important to me. And for me, patience, I'm like a nervy person. I need them to be really patient and take their time, which you do. Maybe not everybody does. But I think it's broadly the same things that make you a good leader, isn't it? You're just teaching, adult teaching children.
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting point, is that a lot of people who deliver forest school qualifications are, I'd imagine, very good forest school practitioners, because they do lots of tailoring and they do lots of, personalizations and really working things out. But my experience, and from what I've heard from other people training, is that a lot of people run their level threes on a very tick-the-box, kind of almost the anti-forest school way.
Yeah, like really, really different.
Yeah, which but I guess it's very different because forest school, the sessions that we run with kids, they don't have any qualifications, so we're not required to meet any standards or, you know, you don't have to have seen the kids do carving, do you know what I mean? But you do if you're doing a qualification.
Yeah, true. I find it quite scary. It's that whole, like, it really feels like being back at school in a not so good way.
And I think that so some people run their forest school, so both of us did like 1 week. I think they used to be called, they used to be called intensive courses. Because I think my understanding is that the way that people used to do their training was like 1 or 2 days a week over a few months. And then people started saying, oh, okay, we can get this all done in a week, so let's do it in a week and call it an intensive.
Yeah.
But then that's become the standard. And see, people seem to have dropped that intensive idea. But I do think that, I mean, like you said before, you are a particularly, I don't think anxious is too strong of a word, you know.
No, totally. Yeah, I'm
But knowing that you have 5 days and then you won't see that trainer again is a very different experience to, okay, I've got to take on, you know, if it's over a few months, you go, I've got to take on today's information. And then if I have some questions, I could probably talk to them next month or next week, and you build up so much. and gives the, I think gives the trainer more time to personalise the course to you.
Yeah, to you, definitely. And I think I definitely got information saturation sort of towards the end of the week. I doubt I was picking much up at all. Like, it was too much in a short space of time. Whereas if it had been one day a week for a month, or do you know what I mean? Like, if it had been a longer process. Yeah.
I wonder if that shift from a couple, you know, 1 or 2 days a week over a few months to a 5-day mm-hmm. course, I wonder if that has changed the demographic of people doing the training.
Yeah. Well, being able to be free for a week fits well for school staff, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. You can mm-hmm.
do that in is being free once a week for a couple of months is a, it's a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it actually makes me think. I'm listening to a book at the moment about broadly about advertising and marketing and stuff, and it was saying about how with it's kind of cognitive dissonance, but it's to do with the more difficult a group is to gain entry to, the more people value that group when they're inside it, even if it's the same group.
That makes sense, yeah.
So this experiment was done where there was like a book club kind of thing, and
yeah.
they had these ladies, and the first group had to read a very graphic scene in front of the whole group. The second group had to read, and the second group just had to read just a normal piece of text, and the third group had to read just nothing. And they were just trying to see whether the levels of embarrassment would change how they perceived it. And the people that had to work really hard to do the embarrassing graphic reading valued the group higher than people who had had to do nothing. And on the flip side, they were saying that this is how cults work, because you get people to do something very embarrassing. Or have you ever been to training where you have to see if they stand up at the front at the start and say why you're there?
Yeah.
And that is, it's apparently psychologically, that does more to you than it does anyone else, because you have to do, A, you're doing something embarrassing, but also you hear yourself saying, oh, well, I'm here because I really love it and I want to do whatever. And because it's come out of your mouth, your brain then goes, well, that must be what I think.
That's, yeah.
But the point that I was kind of having a very meandering walk back to was that
yes.
I wondered if people who had to commit over 3 months value forest school leaders, forest school level 3, more highly than people who go, oh, right, I'll knock it out in a half term, get my course. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you can fit more in, can't you, as well? You could fit, you could do a 5-day intensive course every week if you were the. So.
Yeah. And you could, and it gives you the ability to kind of have a little bit of like trial and error with stuff. So like any sort of techniquey thing, like, oh, look, can you try and rig up a tarp? If you're doing it in a 5-day mm-hmm. course, they've got to show you, you've got to pop up one tarp, and then they're going to go, right, we need to move on now. Okay, let's look at identifying flora and fauna or whatever. If you had a week, you can kind of say, okay, just go and absorb that, do that deep learning thing.
Yeah.
We started by talking about what makes a good trainer, and I guess that's not necessarily, you know, could a good trainer make up for an intensive course?
Yeah, possibly. But like, it's that, I really like that quote, knowledge without love will not stick. So if you've got a trainer with enough passion and engaging enough trainer, maybe. But another thing I was thinking is that we both have only done one training course, so we can't really compare. We don't really know. Maybe it's not as good if you're doing 1 day a week for several months. We don't know.
No, that's a second-hand experience. I know some people, and I know some have you heard of Richard Irving up in North Devon?
Yeah, I'd love to have worked with him, but he's too far for me.
He is a little bit far from us. So he, but he does still, I think, 1 or 2 days a week over a longer time. And we've had a lady called Larissa, actually, who was on this podcast before, she was talking about musical instruments, and she's, I think she's recently finished her kind of time with him, and just her whole energy towards Forest School and towards the training, it was almost as if, I think maybe her, I mean, and I guess her energy was much more that she was enjoying the process of training and taking it all on and improving herself, as opposed to the experience I've had talking to lots of people who've done the 1 week one is almost that it was maybe seen as a bit of an arbitrary barrier. Like they felt as if they could read enough, and they had first-hand experience, maybe volunteering or something. And this 5 days was a little bit like, oh, okay, head down, do your time.
Yeah, jump through that hoop.
Yeah, which is an interesting difference, isn't it? You know, does a good trainer, I guess, would make you think about what can I do?
And do you want that as well? Do you want to be a self-reflective practitioner at the end of it? Having that joy of learning and developing help you to do that, but if you don't have that, something I think is
Hi guys, just interrupting the conversation very briefly, so if you're enjoying the podcast and enjoying the conversation that we're having and the theories and ideas that we put forward, you can come join us face to face. We hold every month, we have an education retreat, so we have an optional night of camping followed by a full day of kind of learning, and it's split up into different focus things. So we're having a day on outdoor cooking, we're having a day on alternative behaviour management, and coming up, the next one is November 1st, and we're having a full day working on early years play working, which is kind of making sure the play is as good as possible and how you can facilitate that. So it's going to be a really great event. And if you go to our website, it's childrenoftheforest.com, or go to our Facebook page, when you buy your tickets, you can use the discount code podcast, and that will get you 10% off the ticket price, which is a pretty hefty sum. So I'll leave it there and we'll get back to the chat. It's very tricky. So I wonder, maybe we should go on to we had a second point, which was what we thought you should come away with training knowing. And I guess we could expand that into knowing and feeling, if we're kind of reaching that point, aren't we, where we're sort of talking about that kind of indescribable like vibe that you get from training.
Vibe is a really good word for it. I was going to use it, but I'm a hippie.
no, absolutely. It's because it's not a, I think it is separate from what makes a good trainer, is you're then starting to talk about kind of the personality of the people you're training with and how the groups are set up and those things that they don't tangibly add or take away anything. But at the end of that week, do you feel like, you know, what should you walk away feeling like you have gained and what you know and stuff? And I think if I can, my experience was very much, so this is the caveat that I have to give, is that my experience, I actually only even did 4 days on my course, of my 5 day course. So I did
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's kind of an embarrassing story, but I was doing the 5 days, and the fourth day was firelighting. And so we did all the firelighting, did all that. And then I came home and I did mine in October. And my house has a log burner. That's how we have our thing. So it's kind of like, you know, did all that.
And cracked.
No. We just lit it in the normal way, did all the stuff. It's relevant to the story because we went out to go and get to a shop not 10 minutes from our house, drove out, came back, and the log burner had lit a fire in the living room, and our living room had a fire in it, and the whole house was covered in smoke damage and all this kind of horrendous stuff, you know. It was one of those things. But I had to phone my instructor and say, look, I'm really sorry, I set my house on fire yesterday, so I can't come back in. After literally the last thing he'd said to me was about fire and fire safety and all this, and I just felt. But the relevant point to that is, I didn't do the last day, and my last day, or the last day on my course, was like lashing and knotwork and den building, and from the photos I saw, everybody on the course built a big den all together. So my experience is kind of what's the word? It's influenced by the fact that I didn't do that last bit of rounding off, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So there might have been a different vibe that I walked away with if I had done all 5 days.
Yeah.
But I would say that I felt like my course was an interesting... Now that I am 3-4 years on, I'm looking back at it, I think I understand now that they gave us lots of time on my training. You know, it was kind of morning heavy on information, and then the afternoon slowed down a bit, was more practical. And we did lots of, like, you know, the tools will be here all week, try and make a spoon by the end of it. So there's, you know, I'd say at least 2 to 2.5 hours a day where you were just kind of left on your own. And reflectively, I think they were trying to get us into that kind of flow state and trying to get us to just be and almost into that meditative state. But because they never vocalized that, I spent the whole time almost feeling a little bit cheated, as if I had paid for contact time that I wasn't getting. And all it would have taken would have been a comment at the start to say, there is a lot of downtime. The purpose of the downtime is to do this. So if you ever feel like that, this is what is happening.
Yeah.
But at the time I felt like, it was a lot of, like, even though it was 5 days and it was quite full, I felt kind of like, oh, right, that wasn't as, like, information dense as I wanted it to be. I wanted there to be more. And I think I came away wishing that we had done more of, I guess, the, like, child development and, you know, the practice of, like, how you are with the kids.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, something that people avoid touching on because it is a personal thing.
Yeah, it really...
Go on.
I was going to say, I think I went into mine having heard your experience and expecting it to be like that. And it was almost the opposite. It was very, very theoretical and information-based in the morning, so lots of... I did find it interesting, but that would bleed into the afternoon, and then generally we'd only get an hour or maybe 2 hours in the woods, so a lot less practical, and no downtime for flow or...
It's an interesting thing. Whether is it, do you need to have a practical experience of flow and of that introspective time, or is it enough to say this is what you should be aiming to get the kids to do?
I think you need to feel it, because being told it doesn't always make you understand it anyway, does it? We all learn, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think there is a sense that you, I guess, should is a big word, but maybe should forest school be a transformative training for more than just practical skills? Like, should it have an impact on your outlook, or is it actually just a bunch of skills that you tick off and off you go?
No, I think for most people, I can think of very few that it should be like that. I think it should be a transformative, wherever you're coming at it from. For a school, well, it's probably quite different to what you've experienced before.
That's an interesting point, that people do come through it from different backgrounds. I don't know what your cohort was like, but mine had a range of teachers and independent people and scout leaders and someone who was a police officer and just wanted to do more stuff with his son and kind of looked at it as like, oh, this is what we should do, which is very interesting, because a bit like we were saying earlier with the personalization, that's a hard mix to personalize for, but it is interesting that the prerequisites to do level 3, you, for at least where I went, were very much kind of, do you have outdoor experience? But no, it seemed to me from talking to my cohort that there wasn't any need to have worked with children.
Yeah, I feel like mine opposite way. So everyone in my cohort was schools teaching as a TA.
Right.
On the form, that's what they wanted. They wanted a background.
Right. And I think, because I wondered whether that is a thing where you go, I think there are a few people on my course who were doing the level three to see if it was right for them. You know, weren't committed to, like, I'm going to do forest school. It was like, oh, right, it's another, I don't know.
It's a training. Yeah.
And it's difficult to say, isn't it? Because I did my training and was like, this is it. This is the 100% philosophy. This is what I think is right.
Yeah.
But I don't have an experience of what it's like to be someone who does the training and goes, I can see the benefit of that, but I disagree with this, this, and this. Do you know?
Well, I suppose it must be some people's opinions, yeah. And especially if you're taking it back into a school and still have to work within a framework.
Yeah, and I guess...
But then...
But I wonder whether that is why they don't touch too much in training on interaction and things like that, because they know people are going to take it back and run it through the mangler, as it were, to get it into schools, so that if you give people this beautiful unobtainable idea of like what it is to do pure forest school, which I guess is kind of closest to what we do, because we're an independent company, we don't work for anybody, you know. Some of our leaders work in schools, so that has been adjusted, I guess. But in terms of like sessions that we do in the woods, that is as forest schooly as forest school gets.
Yes.
But to give people that experience on the training and say this is what you must do, I wonder whether people would come back and feel disheartened if they went, all of that was just unobtainable.
Yeah, and we've got this 2-hour slot, one off.
Yeah.
Available to deliver it.
Yeah, it's very tricky.
I think.
Go on.
I was just gonna say, I think after the training, one of the things that you want to feel is that confidence to take it and make it yours, not against the principles, but to have that confidence to be an independent leader.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, this is something that I think I've developed in myself in the last, oh my gosh, year, maybe nearly.
Do you think your training helped with that, or do you think it's something you were doing anyway?
I think it helped because it showed me things I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And that sort of lit a fire and just made me feel a bit more like, no, I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this a bit more than I realised. Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Sometimes it's only when you're ideas are challenged that you realise how much your brain has to give on what you do believe, you know.
How strongly held they are.
Yeah, and how much, and maybe not even how strong they are, but how much background you maybe didn't know you had.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
So I guess, actually, that comes on quite nicely to the third point, where, so the phrase that I've picked up, and it comes up quite a lot in the Forest School Facebook group, the support group, but also in... actually, do you know what's really interesting? Now that I read it, of looking at it written down, it's exactly the same as... Did you see the news story a while ago that the Kelly kettle that exploded?
Explosion, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't Forest School, but it was someone who'd done outdoor training, and they left the bung in a Kelly kettle, and it exploded, and shrapnel and boiling water went all over the kids, and a couple of the kids had really nasty burns.
Oh, so bad.
Yeah, it was a very difficult story for, I think, all the sort of outdoor ed community sort of responded. But the phrase that came up was, my trainers showed me to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I guess it's an interesting discussion, isn't it? If you don't understand the reason for a technique or a theory, should you look at that and go, okay, I should do what someone more experienced tells me, or should you look at that and go, okay, well, I need to challenge that because it might not be the best?
No, yeah, absolutely. You've got to be a critical thinker. If you're gonna dynamically risk assess on your own for your own session, you don't want to be a parrot. You can't just depend on a set of rules, can you? You've got to be able to challenge things yourself. and or like find out why, what are the reason.
And it, yeah, and I guess that is a thing that comes in. So my trainers were particularly good at this, I think, where they would set up an activity like chopping firewood with a billhook. And although it took longer, they just talked us through, got us to kind of talk through, like, okay, what do you think we need to be aware of? And we gave all the answers, and we, you know, and anything that they weren't sure on, they kind of went like, well, okay, that's not how we do it, but this is kind of, they weren't gospel about anything, if you know what I mean. They were kind of very much along the lines of, okay, as long as it's safe, this is one way of doing it, this is the way we do it quite often, but what you're suggesting is fine. But I don't think that's how a lot of training is done. And there's a lot of trainers who will say, this is how you do this. And because it's like any teaching, isn't it? It is quicker to say to a child, this is how you do it, don't do it any other way, than it is to sit down and talk through and explain why it's safe and how it's safe. And that way we're empowering the kids to make their own risk assessments. In the same way that I guess in a level three training, I would expect people to be saying to I would expect the trainer to say to their pupils, okay, as it needs to meet this criteria, but how you get there isn't important to me.
Yeah, you've got to encourage that creative confidence.
And that adaptability that I think, like you were saying about confidence, you are going to feel very differently confident if you know how to, let's take cutting wood with a billhook because it's a really like simple example, but if on your training you did it with an axe and a cherry mallet on a log in a roped off area on a completely flat surface, right?
Yeah.
But if you didn't explore why that was safe, then when you run your own session and your site is very slightly on a hill, or you've got a billhook, not an axe, maybe you don't have enough rope to completely secure off an area. You know, and I think a lot of trainers then have that experience where they go, oh, no, we can't do that because it isn't safe.
Yeah.
And that's more worrying, I think, that you're not empowering your students if you just say, look, do it my way or don't do it. And similarly, you know, I think over the last few years have slowly come to that conclusion with knife work and children where I think because knives are scary, right? There's a gut reaction to that is sharp.
You see them as a weapon on telly.
Yeah.
They're not.
And so I think it's very comforting to have a system that is like, your knees always point this way, you always sit here, you always carve that way, you do, you know. Which is very different to saying, okay, make sure the blade's not coming towards you or anybody else, so that you're not going to hurt them. And that way you can carve, if you want to carve the knife down into a log, that's just as safe as carving it down into some open space, into the ground. Do you know what? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And being able to say to the kids, okay, well, as long as you are doing it safely, let's find a comfortable way for you, and let's talk about why it is or isn't safe.
Yeah. And that's teaching them to manage their own risk. That's so important.
Yeah. Did you feel... I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but on your training, you've already said that you kind of disagreed with some of the things that your trainer was... suggesting the right word. Maybe I want to go with preaching. From what you've said, I'm going to go with preaching.
Yeah, okay. I think that's fair.
And do you think that your environment was one where you could suggest alternatives or even query things?
Not for activities. I'm saying that. I don't think anyone queried because not being able to get a word in edgeways for a start. But I don't think that it fostered that self-reflective practice,
right?
And questioning
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you think that anyone on your course will have gone away? Do you think there do you think there's anything? I guess the question is there anything actually dangerous about that, or is it just not ideal? Because my experience is some things like that can be dangerous.
Yeah.
The one that's come up recently is, it comes up pretty frequently, is people asking about gloves with tools.
Oh, it's always gloves, isn't it? Always gloves on the whole hand. That's the only question.
Oh, well, there's a massive spectrum from, like, gloves on both hands, gloves on tool hands, no gloves, and then the range of, like... There's a range of, like, oh, and we only do it in the sawbuck, or we do it here, or we do it, you know, there's things like that. But there's lots of people that seem to have picked their position on gloves based...
And they won't budge.
But they won't budge, but not for any critical or logical reason, but because I did my training with X, and they said this.
They said this, yeah.
And although there is, a bit like we kind of said a little bit ago, there is something to... some sort of merit to saying, I did my training with the super duper forest school team and they said no gloves. So you know, it's almost as if like you're accepting your own ignorance in some ways and going like, there isn't a super duper forest school team. I'm using that as an example. you know, you're going like, the super duper forest school team obviously know so much more than me. So even if I don't understand, I should do it their way.
Yeah.
But if the super duper forest school team is so super duper, I feel like they should be able to explain their practice, and through that conversation, you should arrive. If it is the best and only practice, then through that conversation, you should arrive at the same practice as them.
Yeah.
But to blindly, I mean, that's a little bit how cults work, isn't it? They just go, "Don't question this. Just accept that I know more than you."
Yeah. Be able to question it, and you need to know those reasons for yourself, don't you? And to be able to justify.
Yeah, and I think that's what it does. I think questioning sometimes comes across as rude, as if you're not respecting the authority or the experience. But actually, if you're feeling like the learning you're doing isn't deep enough, questioning shouldn't be rude. It should be a kind of like, can you talk to me about where you got to that? And so, like, we run training at our at Children of the Forest, and anybody that questions kind of why we do stuff on those courses, or even parents in normal groups, I feel really confident in being able to say, like, well, this is why we've arrived there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Reasoning.
Yeah. And putting it forward in a way that is kind of, I guess sometimes it's a mix of, like, well, I believe this, and then another bits of it being, like, and logically, it follows that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I guess... Go on.
I think for me, it's, like, how I've come to feel with doing my own risk assessments. Like, of course, you could just teach someone... you could just give someone a form with it all filled in, and they would just use that. But knowing that I do my own, and I can explain the reasons I've arrived at something. I feel like that makes me a better practitioner now than, like, if you just were given it with no reasoning. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It does, it does. Yes, the same,
being able to justify it, being able to know why you've done something, then I think that's fine then, isn't it? Because people might have done something differently, as long as you know why and can explain why.
Yeah, if I can draw a teaching parallel, it's the difference between I could have taught, when I was teaching in you know, state education, I could have taught an entire class how to write a absolutely perfect, like, paragraph of literacy, right? I could have, but literally, you know, you'd do it through dictation and rote, wouldn't you? You'd have it on the board and they'd write it every day. And, like, how long do you reckon it would take? If you needed to get them to write 100 words, it's going to take less than, like, a month before you had 30 kids who could write level 6, you know, 100 words, right?
Yep.
But that is not the same as saying all those children are able to write at a level 6.
No, definitely.
And so I think that's the difference between handing someone techniques and skills and saying, do it like I do it, this is the way you do it.
Mm.
And the longer process of saying, okay, I wonder whether trainers, this is a thought just coming into my head, but I wonder whether trainers consider their students to be representative of themselves once they leave, or is it a kind of, okay, once you're out the door, your practice is your practice?
Yeah, that's such a...
Because
I feel like...
It's a little bit like, you know, when you go to universities and people still, in some circles, are very kind of like, oh, you went to that university, did you? Oh, okay. And universities have a thing, but it's less of a thing in forest school to talk about where you were trained, I guess, publicly, maybe.
Yeah. When I think about certain leaders that inspire me, I haven't even considered where they trained.
Yeah. Which is actually... a very interesting thought, whether you continue to be, because if you, I guess maybe it's because it becomes closer to like maybe feeling like a franchise. And if you did have some training where they said, this is how you, you know, if you, for whatever reason had to walk around with a badge saying your trainer's name on it, then yeah, exactly. But you would, that trainer would presumably train you differently and would want to keep a closer tab on you afterwards.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. It's an interesting thought.
Would you ever get a new generation of people that would then go on to train for a school leader? Because then when they're questioned, will they know why they're recommending certain things?
Yeah.
You don't need that ability to
to pass on the information because you've just parroted it yourself.
Yeah, we don't want experts.
Oh, okay, so this is my teaching brag, right? So, okay. My university lecturer, so I did music at university. My university lecturer, if you go back six teachers, so, you know, my teacher's teacher was taught by someone who was taught by someone who was taught by Beethoven. I'm six teachers away from Beethoven, which is...
That's really cool. Six degrees of separation.
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting... Yeah. But you don't get that. That's the sort of equivalent I was thinking in forest school, if people kind of went, oh, I was taught by Mark Smith. I'm making up names. Mark Smith, who was actually one of John... Birdhouse's students, who, you know, like, you don't get these big prolific names that kind of...
No, I think you get people who say that they created over here, but I don't know if everyone else would.
Oh, I was thinking more in terms of like, so I think big names that I can think of off the top of my head, I would have John Cree as a name that I know.
Yeah, I know John.
So he comes up quite a lot.
Yeah.
Lily comes up quite a lot.
Lily Horseman.
But Lily, for obvious reasons, has some... I was going to say a really rude phrase then, but that isn't what I meant. I was going to say she has some weight behind her, but that isn't what I mean. What I mean is Lily's reputation has weight behind it.
Oh, yeah, that's a better way of saying it.
I'll just get kicked out. This is it. I've got to stop now because I'm going to be kicked out of the Forest School Association. yeah. But I think there's I think there's a much longer conversation to be had here. I'm going to cut it because we're going on quite a long time. We're almost at double what we would normally talk about.
You might have something to do.
Yeah, no, I'm just not going to edit it. I'll just leave it all down. But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's a pleasure. I'm going to see you in the morning because we're working together.
See you in the morning for work, yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, cheers.
Nice to chat. Bye.